All right.
That was wonderful.
Okay, we are in Ezekiel. And what part of the kingdom is he from?
Oh, the southern part, Judah.
Southern part, Judah. Wow. Good.
The river of Kibar, that's where he is.
He's on the river of Kibar, which is where?
Babylon.
In Babylon. All right. And he was taken by King
Nebuchadnezzar.
I have to always think about how to spell it, but that's how you spell it. Okay. Nebuchadnezzar takes him and a select group of people, the smartest, the strongest, the most wonderful, okay? And we're going to learn a little bit more about the kings. You learned a little bit more about them last week, but we're going to learn a little bit more about the story of the kings tonight. Hopefully we'll get to that point. So, Ezekiel has several different visions. His visions involve angels and wheels and eyes and wings and faces of multiple beasts, which are not the...
Why is it the bears?
Not the bear, right? Right? Which everybody guessed last week.
Also no tigers.
Right? No tigers either.
There's a lion.
Okay. There's a lion.
And an
yes.
Eagle. And a human and an ox.
Eagle and a human and an ox. Very good. So these creatures, more important than the creatures, are what they are carrying. A dome with a throne on top, and then on the throne is Jesus, okay? Pre-incarnate Jesus.
Before he was in the flesh.
Before he was brought in the flesh, very good. So, as he has this, then he eats something. He eats a scroll, which is what?
Full of bad stuff and tastes like honey.
Sour.
Full of really bad stuff and tastes like honey, all right? So that's, the scroll is important. Bad, sad, mad, okay, bad stuff. But it all tastes like honey in the end. But he knows it's full of bad stuff, but it tastes like honey, all right? What else do we need to pick up? We need to pick up what's the big problem in Israel or in
there's gonna be
well before the siege. Why is there a siege?
Because they have fallen away from God.
How?
Idols.
Idols, okay? And you remember he went into the temple with and he went into all the different rooms of the temple and he looked and there was different people worshiping different gods and everyone. He went outside and they're worshiping the sun. He went in, there were women weeping for Tammuz. And there was a whole cruise of different people. He went in one of the rooms and there was creatures all over the walls that they were worshiping. Okay? The whole idea is that it was full of idolatry. And what is an idol?
Anything that becomes too important in your life.
Okay? Anything that becomes more important in God than God. So does it have to be a statue?
No.
No.
No? Can it be a concept?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Can it be a cause?
Yeah.
Can be anything. It can be a thought process. That you prefer the thought process over God. Okay? And that is a battle of all kinds of humans. We battle it all the time. I mean, it can be money, and it can be cars, and it can be houses and things like that, but it could be your own pride. It can be your own idol. Okay? That your pride is so important to you that it is more important than God. Okay? Anything that you have. So, the whole idea is when there's something that is that important, or many things that are that important, that are more important with God, then yes, you turn your back on God and you walk away. And what does God demand? In the Ten Commandments. Yeah, he does.
That's one of them.
That is one of them. There are some commandments that have to do with God, specifically.
Shalt not have any other gods before
me. But shall not have any other gods before me. Because he is a jealous God, he says, right? He said, this is who I am, and you are to follow me. Alright? So, idols become a very big, important thing in Israel, and they struggle with them their whole existence as a nation. Okay? They struggle and struggle and struggle and struggle and struggle until God brings in a plan for both the North and the South Kingdom. The Northern Kingdom, which we're not really talking about tonight, but the Northern Kingdom is taken over by a country called Assyria. Where the Southern Kingdom, of course, is taken over by the Babylonians, okay, under King Nebuchadnezzar. Or the Chaldeans. We talked a little bit about the Chaldeans becoming that super race, okay? So, we got the problem, we've got the main character, we got the setting, all right? And now, there's got to be hope somewhere in there because we see the bitter, the sad, the mad. We got all kinds of signs, right? He tells them they're going to take over Israel. He plays army, right? He lays on his side and he eats the defiled bread, right? That he's cooked with manure, right? So all kinds of signs. He cuts his hair off and lets it all blow off in the wind and weaves just a few in his garment. Alright? Those are important parts. Those few. Because when they're in his garment, they're safe. Protected. Close to him. But just a few. Something, what's left, would be called a remnant. If you go into a carpet store, they buy big rolls of carpet, or as big as they need for a job. And if this room is 12 by 16, which it's not, but if it was, okay, and the roll was 14 feet wide and 16 feet long, you could cut it at any length, then you'd have an extra 2 feet. So you'd have a 2 foot by 16 foot piece. Seems pretty useless, doesn't it? What are you going to do with a 2 foot by 16 foot piece?
Carpet is 2 foot.
Right. You have a really long scarf, maybe. Right?
You can
make a hammock.
The whole idea is you do have a little bit left. And they call that a
remnant.
A remnant. Okay? That little bit left for the right person and the right situation is worth something to them. Okay? And that is what God is trying to portray, is he always has a remnant in Israel. Even though there is great destruction, even though they go through these many, many, many problems, he has a remnant, a piece that he keeps. The little bits that he's woven. Okay, very close to him. He's protected them. And who is the remnant?
People,
that's good, because otherwise they'd be gone, right? If he destroyed them all, there wouldn't be any left, right? So they're Jewish, that's good.
The ones that haven't turned away from God.
Okay, the few that have not turned away from God. Notice, God has always acted like this, from the very beginning. From the very, very beginning. When God brought judgment ever on people, he still saved a piece. Okay? God said, in the day that you eat of the fruit of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, you shall surely. And he could have destroyed them. And in their souls, they definitely lost and died in that connection that they had walking in the garden with God. And they were kicked out of the garden, and paradise was changed. And all of nature was cursed they were given an opportunity to still have children. Right? Sinful as they were, still have children because he was going to save the human race. The hero born of woman would come along the line. I think, something like that. The earth got so bad again that everybody in the whole earth thought evil continuously in their mind. God worked in humankind that way, and he saved a peace. And somewhere along the line, there were many, many nations, some actually that started in the Chaldean area, in a place called Ur.
Ur.
Ur. You are Ur. Okay? Who came from Ur?
That was Abraham.
Abraham. Came from Ur. And God took a tiny, tiny piece, one person and his wife, from that whole entire people. And what did he do with it? Right? Through one son, which was Isaac. And then Isaac had Esau. Jacob, right? Esau, and then Jacob had 12 sons, and they became the 12 tribes of Israel, and he grew a nation out of it, and the nation got leaders, and then kings, and then turned against God, and then God again said, "You turn against me, and I'm going to peel back this whole nation. I'm going to make this nation, I'm going to destroy it." Except, and I'm going to use the word destroy right now, but I'm going to change that later. Okay? I'm going to destroy it, except for who?
The remnant.
The remnant. The leftover. The pieces I'm going to save out and protect. And how does he do that? How does he do it? Armies come in and invade and take over all of Jerusalem, the capital city. How does he save the people? And other prophets and the people that he took away. Because, know this, though Nebuchadnezzar was huge and powerful, and in God's eyes, the most incredible human kingdom ever to live on the face of the earth, Babylon was the biggest, most impressive kingdom. God said that, not me. All right? Though he was powerful, God still ruled, and God made Nebuchadnezzar come into Israel, and God made Nebuchadnezzar take the people from Jerusalem and decimate the city, and he allowed all of that to happen. And you say, what a terrible, awful, terrible thing. And yet Nebuchadnezzar took those people back and saved them from the destruction. He took back a remnant of people. And really, he was doing God's will in all of it, which is an incredible part. All of human history is written this way. Tonight, we're going to find out about a king, the king of Israel, of Judah at the time, okay, that's going to try to fight against God's plan. It's not going to work out well for him. All right? right? In fact, he's going to reach out for some help. We're going to get to that. But let's go through a few more spots here. So we've talked about the signs of destruction, about him playing army, about him eating the bread and the haircut, lying on his side, okay, for a year, right? And it talks all about the details of Jerusalem being taken over, etc., etc. So we have a couple more signs that pop up along the way. Ezekiel chapter 12. Verse number 17, 18, 19, and 20, please. As we do one of the next signs, I'm just going to pick this sign up as a little bit of a, to put the story together for you.
Moreover, the word of the Lord came to me, saying, Son of man, eat thy bread with quaking, and drink thy water with trembling, and with carefulness. Say to the people of the land, this is what the sovereign Lord says about those living in Jerusalem and in the land of Israel. They will eat their food with anxiety and drink their water in despair, for the land will be stripped of everything in it because of the violence of all.
The inhabited towns will be laid waste and the land will be desolate. Then you will know that I am the Lord.
Okay, so what is his next sign? What is he doing? While he eats his food, what's he doing?
Shaking.
He's trembling. Yes, he's literally shaking with fear. Now, how does he do it, right? Because it's a sign, it's a strange thing. Now, doesn't Ezekiel have a bunch of really weird stuff he's got to do, right? It's weird. And this is part of the whole sad thing. Is he doesn't get much happy stuff to do, does he? I mean, it's just a lot of strange stuff, right? That he has to do. But again, he is trying for the love of these people. He is trying to tell them God's message. God has this message for you. You have to know fully where you stand with God. And Ezekiel was allowing them to understand. When all the things happen in your life, they are not by chance. All right? Nothing is by chance that happens in your life. Why you are here tonight, not by chance. All right? God has a plan. You don't know what's next in your life. I don't know what's next in my life. We don't know. But God is saying to them, look, my plan is this. My plan is this. I'm giving you this to know when you get there. It's not a random act of events. When Nebuchadnezzar comes in and takes over Jerusalem and does the final desolation. They've been there three times, but it will be three times. They come in and they take more, and they come in and they take more, and they come in and they take more again, and they finally just destroy Jerusalem. When he does that, know that this is part of my plan. So even though it seems terrible, even though it seems awful, even though it seems like there's no hope, and you're in the midst of the toughest time in your life, I have a plan. And this is not by accident. All right? So God knows of the battle that's going on in the hearts of the people of the country. And they've been losing the battle. Losing it and losing it and losing it and losing it. And how does that feel when you lose a battle?
Bad.
Pretty bad. Pretty discouraged. And again and again and again. And some people have just turned right away from God, totally. But even the people who are fighting to try and keep and do the right thing, seems like they're constantly in battle in their life. But no, God says, when this happens, I'm still in charge. All right? So, this is just the next sign. The shaking, the trembling. All right. Enough. Sign is a little parable that he has. Chapter 15, verse number 6, 7, and 8, please.
Therefore, thus saith the Lord God, as the vine tree among the trees of the forest, which I have given to the fire of the field, so will I give the inhabitants of Jerusalem.
All that I have face against them. They shall go out from one fire, and another fire shall devour them. And ye shall know that I am the Lord when I set my face against them.
And I will make the land desolate because they have committed a trespass, save the Lord.
All right, God says, and I'm only just giving you little snippets of it, but God says this: I walk into a forest, and it's full of big trees. And these are big, beautiful oak trees and cedar trees and great big maple trees. And if you go and you look at all those trees and you say, wow, that tree, if you cut that tree down, you could build beautiful furniture out of it. You could build all kinds of things out of it. It's so useful. It's strong. You can hang something on it. You could bolt something to it. You could create beams for houses out of it. It has so much potential. And I look at this tree and I look at that tree, and then I come along in the forest, and all of a sudden there's this little vine. And this little vine grows up the side of a tree. And he says, that's Israel, what you're like, that vine. He says, the vine is really useless to me. I can't cut it down and build anything out of it. It has no potential, you know, other than swinging by like Tarzan or something. Have you ever done that before? Swung? It doesn't work out well most of the time, okay? I swear you can't pull a vine out of a tree until you try to swing on it. And then it comes out.
I will swing.
I did that.
All right? So understand this. He says it's useless. This vine is useless except for one thing I can do with it. I can cut it up and I can burn it. That's all I can do with it. they're not useful for anything except that water, I guess. Cut it. Right? So this is what he says is, I cut it down, I throw in the fire, and that's exactly what it's just useless. All the things and all the potential I gave you and all the good things I gave you and everything I put in front of you, he says, and you've done like nothing with it. It's all gone. It's useless. It's only good to be cut down and thrown into the fire, and that's what I'm going to do with it, he says. All right? So there's another little picture. And as we put these little pictures together, he's trying to help you understand that what shape Israel's in. In God's sight, when you're useless, whoa, man, that's, you've gone down a far track. Understand, these people have been doing this for generations and generations and generations to get them there. They've had prophet after prophet after prophet, lifetime after lifetime after lifetime, saying, turn back to God. So we finally come up to the crux. The moment in history when Nebuchadnezzar comes in, takes over, takes people out, and here's Ezekiel sitting in there, and now the final, and he comes in again, and then finally he's going to do one more. The third, which is going to just totally destroy Jerusalem. Alright? He's going to destroy Jerusalem. Now Nebuchadnezzar, he could be ruthless at times. But like I said, in God's estimation, Nebuchadnezzar was an amazing leader. He did incredible things in Babylon. He took over parts of the world when no one had ever taken over the amounts of the parts of the world that they did. And understand that who came behind him? The Persians and the Medes, who are probably less known. And then the Greeks came behind him and took over the world again. And the Romans came behind him. And God said those three were nothing compared to what Babylon did. Everybody else just followed in Babylon's footsteps. But Nebuchadnezzar was an amazing military leader. He was really a good king in some ways. He did have a bad temper. And he did have a very big pride. And God knocked him to the ground for it at one point in his career. He actually turned him where he thought he went crazy in his mind and he thought he was a wild beast. It said for 7 seasons, and we don't know what that means except that maybe 7 whole years. He was actually out with wild donkeys outside of the kingdom. There's your great king. He laid down. His hair grew, it said, long, like eagle's feathers, it said. His fingernails grew. He dug and scratched in the dirt and ate the grass for 7 years. Because God said, I'll show you who's in charge. You think you have done everything, Nebuchadnezzar. You couldn't do one step without me. And after he turned him back, one day as he's sniffing the grass, he turns and God gives him all his faculties back and he looks up and says, God, you're in charge. And forevermore, in his kingdom, he turned his kingdom to follow God. All right? In his lifetime, he did that. So he was a ruthless king at times. And we will see some of his ruthlessness. He expected loyalty. He expected when he said something that it was done. And we're going to find out in just a few minutes when you go against him. Watch out. Watch out. He's coming for you. But first, let's do one more picture, okay? One more picture in chapter number 16. Now, this is another little parable, all right? And God's going to explain in a very strange way about Israel. What he's going to say is, I walked out, Israel, and I found you. I was walking one day through the wilderness, and I found you laying in the ground in a pool of blood. And that pool of blood was because you were an abandoned baby. A little tiny baby. Right. You were raised, you were just thrown out there, left for dead. In your own blood. No one took care of you. No one did the things that they do to every baby that they care about. And he'll do a couple, he'll give you a little details. They talk about washing the baby and some different things, okay? No one did that for you, he said, but I did. I found you, and I took you, and I kept you, and I raised you. I put you in clothes, fancy clothes, and I took care of you. And I took very good care of you, and I raised you, he said. And then I expected you to be faithful to me, because I all these years. We'll read and find out what happens. Alright? So, as he explains this story, chapter 16, verse number 3, I'll start with verse 3. We're going to keep going around until we get through verse 14. This is the story of how God views Israel. What happened? What he did. And say, thus saith the Lord, God unto Jerusalem, thy birth and thy nativity is of the land of Canaan. Thy father was an Amorite, and thy mother an Hittite.
And as far from thy nativity, in the day thou wast born, thy navel was not cut, neither wast thou washed in water to supple thee. Thou wast not salted at all, nor swaddled at all.
Okay, so what didn't happen normally? What's the first thing you do? Cut the cord, right? You cut the cord. And then you take care of the baby. You wash them and you... they salted the baby. And why'd they salt the babies? Infection. Infection. Right? Because salt kills. A lot of snails. Infection things. Also snails, yes. Alright. So, and then swaddling it. Like, you take care of it. This is my baby. I care about it. Because the placenta comes out. It's attached.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Next verse, please.
Let I hid it thee to do any of these unto thee. I have commission upon thee, but thou wast cast out in the open field to the loathing of thy person in the day that thou wast born.
Nobody cared for you. Verse 6. And I decked thee also with ornaments, and I put bracelets upon thy hands and a chain on thy neck.
And I put a jewel on thy forehead and earrings in thine ears and a beautiful crown upon thy head. Thus wast thou decked with gold and silver, and thy raiment was of fine linen and and broken wood. Thou didst eat fine flour and honey and oil, and that thou wast exceeding beautiful, and thou didst have
prosper.
And your fame spread among nations on account of your beauty, because the splendor I have given you made your beauty perfect because of summer.
Okay, so here it is. I found you. I raised you. I took you. I made you my own. Okay? So it's like a picture of saying, I found you, took care of you for when you were a little tiny baby. And when you were old enough, I took you as my very own. Okay? I was faithful to you. I gave you everything. And you were so beautiful. And I gave you jewels and all sorts of stuff. He said, and I love you. Your mom. I love you. Verse number 15, he said, but thou didst trust in thine own beauty and playest the harlot because of thine renown, and pourest out thy fornications on everyone that passed by. His it was. So, basically what he says, you've come enough, you've grown into this beautiful lady I've shown you. Now think about this as a nation. Of course, Israel is known throughout the world as a nation at this point because they were rescued out of one of the more powerful countries in the world, the kingdom of Egypt, right? God took them. And don't you think that when Israel walked out of Egypt, and Egypt had stories of all these plagues and all this stuff and lost to a nation of slaves, and God did all these miracles and God parted the Red Sea, all those stories spread far and wide. Took from so small and took care of and protected and built you up and brought you to this place, and then what'd you do? You turned your back on me. I showed you all the love and gave you everything, and you gave me nothing back. You turned your back on me. In fact, you said, I'd rather have anything else but you. Anything but you. So, he gives this story, which is an amazing story. It's a terrible story in a lot of ways, okay? But, and it's a bitter story, because really, that's where all the sad and the mad and the bad are. In that scroll. Okay, that's the story. And Ezekiel keeps telling these Israelites, and I'm sure they were tired of hearing it, right? It gets hard to read the book of Ezekiel sometimes because it's so full of tough things, tough messages for Israel. And yet, if you go to chapter 16, verse number 60, after he talks about the destruction that will come, after he says, and here's what I'm going to do, then he goes back, and as God's way is always, as we talked about way back from Adam and Eve, he remembers his promises, and he goes back, and he keeps them through a tiny sliver often, but he always does it. Verse number 60, as we see what his covenant is, all right, verse, where are we, 60?
Yet I will remember the covenant I made with you in the days of your youth, and I will establish an everlasting covenant with you.
When thou shalt remember my ways and be ashamed, and when thou shalt receive thy sisters, thine elder and thy younger, and I will give them unto thee for daughters, but not by thy covenant.
And I will establish my covenant with thee, and thou shalt know that I am the Lord.
That thou mayest remember and be confounded and never open thy mouth and more because of shame when I am pacified toward thee for all that thou hast done, saith the Lord God.
All right, he says, what I'm going to do to you is going to be so complete that you're never going to turn away from me again. I'm going to save you. I'm going to protect you. I'm going to bring you through this whole destruction, but it's not going to be a complete destruction. Instead of a destruction, it's going to become an act of discipline. An act of correction. Okay? To say, I care enough about you to walk you through every step of the way and bring you through and correct you. All right? I care that much about you that I'm going to do this. I'm going to keep the covenant I have with you. Now, way back when David was king over Judah and Israel, God made a covenant with him and said, I will always have a son of David on the throne of Israel forevermore. And so God kept that promise alive through Israel until Jesus was born. And when Jesus was born and became son of David, right, through David's line, and Jesus became the king forevermore. And so God kept his promise. All right? God's promise was to get all the way through to that point. Now, God's got lots and lots more promises. But if you go way, way, way back when, back to Abraham, he says, I'm going to give you descendants that will go as the sands of the sea. There's the sand on the earth. Or the stars in the sky. So many you can't count them. And so God's promises are good for those whom he loves. And he will keep them even through these tough times. All right? God is still in the process of working to correct. He's not working to destroy them. If he wanted to destroy them, he could wipe them out completely. But God's plan is to protect them. Right? So God brings in Nebuchadnezzar, and then God says, all right, I've got a story for you. I've got a story of an eagle. And if you were in chapter 17, verse number 1, And the word of the Lord came unto me, saying, Son of man, put forth a riddle, and speak a parable unto the house of Israel, and say, Thus saith the Lord God, a great eagle with great wings, long-winged, full of feathers, which has diverse colors, came unto Lebanon, and took the highest branch of the cedar. And he cropped off the top of his young twigs, and carried it into a land of traffic, or a land of merchants. He set it in a city of merchants. He took also of the seed of the land, and he planted it in the fruitful field, and he placed it by great waters, and set it as a willow tree. And as it grew, became a spreading vine of low stature, whose branches turned towards him. And the roots thereof were under him, so it became a vine, and brought forth branches, and shot forth sprigs. All right? It's a little picture. Great big grand eagle comes out and goes to the very top of this towering cedar tree and snaps off the top of it. Flies away, puts it in the ground somewhere, and it grows up. Eagle, the first eagle, is a picture of Nebuchadnezzar. Okay? Because what does he do? He flies into
Judah
and takes them and plants them elsewhere. Okay? You get it. Right. Good. So, it grows. It's not grand. It doesn't grow back into another cedar tree. It's a little willow tree. It kind of grows low in stature, it says, but it still survives. All right? It still survives. That is the remnant. It's growing towards Nebuchadnezzar. That was God's plan. God says, I'm going to do this. I'm going to discipline you. I'm going to correct you. I'm going to take you for 70 years. And you're going to live as a nation under Nebuchadnezzar. And I'm going to show you that I can put you where I want in this world. And eventually, after 70 years, God frees them and brings them back. And they go and they rebuild Jerusalem. To this day, okay, they have kept the country alive. It was decimated time and time and time again. And then finally, when it looked like everything was lost, all the Jews were spread around all the entire world. Back through World War I, World War II, they were spread throughout the entire world. Until after World War II, when such a terrible thing happened through Hitler and through the extermination of 6 million Jews, by the way, almost 6 million Christians, too, were exterminated. All right? All of these people were exterminated. What a terrible thing. And then what happened? All the world, in an act that never had been done before, said, we're going to give you back the country you lost hundreds of years ago. The country you were driven out of by other forces. We're just going to give it back to you. Just come back. Well, who do you think's in charge of that? Right? God knew it. And God knew that he could change the hearts of every single king and president and leader in the entire world to say, we're going to bring Israel back. I'm going to put them right back in the promised land right where I want them to be. And in 1948, there was a movement called Zionism, in which all the Jews from all over the world that had lived for generations in other countries came back in to repopulate Israel. Because God's plan was to bring them back for the end times. Okay? By the way, Jerusalem has been that city that's been kept alive. Just barely, many times. And we have seen something even as far as yesterday, I think, in the news. Right? When Jerusalem, America, put our embassy out of, I think it was in Tel Aviv, okay, where the capital city of Jerusalem was, we put it back in Jerusalem. I mean, back in capital city of Israel. We took it out and put it back in Jerusalem, our embassy, and said, that's the one we recognize. The president's been talking about it for decades. done. We did it. You know what happened the very next day? A bombing. Because they don't want it there. Oh, who do you think doesn't want it? Well, Satan is fighting hard against the big plan. But again, God has always done this. He's always brought us back one after another. His plan, he's put it together, and he said, here's what we're doing. I'm doing this. So there's Nebuchadnezzar with the branch. He comes and plants it. And now, more of the story. Okay? Verse number... Verse number 7. There was also another great eagle with great wings and many feathers, and behold, this vine did bend her roots towards him, and shot forth her branches towards him, that he might water it by the furrows of her plantation. It was planted in a good soil by great waters, that it might spring forth, that it might bear fruit, that it might be a goodly vine. All right. Say thou, thus saith the Lord God, shall it prosper? Shall he not pull up the roots thereof and cut off the fruit thereof, that it wither? It shall wither in the leaves of her spring, even in the great power of the many people to pluck it up by the roots thereof. All right. So this vine, which represents Israel, all right, has another eagle visit it. And this eagle's a grand eagle. Not quite as grand as Nebuchadnezzar. Well, says it's got feathers of many colors, okay? Varied feathers, which means there are people from all over the world that are in his kingdom. Okay? Now, this second eagle that comes in, and the branches and the roots all of a sudden say, oh, I like this guy better. I like this eagle better. I want to bend towards this one. He's going to water me better. He's going to take care of me better. All right? Now, again, I told you it was God's plan for Nebuchadnezzar, right? Who's this second eagle? You probably don't know this. This second eagle is the king of Egypt.
Pharaoh,
okay? There's a backstory that's happening. There's a backstory. So when Nebuchadnezzar came in the very first time and basically took that peace out of Jerusalem and out of Judah, he left behind much of the country. He left behind many of the riches. He really just took people. Some riches, no doubt. It was desolation that he did, but he didn't destroy the kingdom of Judah the first time. In fact, there was a very young king who was in place of that, and the very young king was 10 years old. And that king was on the throne for several more months in the next year, basically. Nebuchadnezzar sent back to the kingdom to go get the royal treasury from Jerusalem. He says, oh, now I want all the gold. I've got the people. I want all the gold. And when you go back, take this little boy king, this 10-year-old boy king, and bring him back. He's got a brother. And his brother's name is Zedekiah. Okay, you talked a little about him last week, all right? Put him on the throne in place of this 10-year-old boy who had the throne. You put him on the throne, bring back the boy all over and over. Okay? Back. So Zedekiah is now on the throne of Israel. And now he's coming back again. And this third time he comes back. What? Yeah, what's happening? We've learned about it with the army. We've learned about it with the... when Ezekiel's playing army and setting up everything, what's going to do to the city? He's going to siege the city. Inside of the city, when he finally comes back, Zedekiah is there. And what he's trying to do is just starve out the city. Or get them totally surrender, which is playing with their head, playing with their mind. Zedekiah knows that they're starving in the city. He has some sons. In the middle of the night, he sneaks out a back gate with his sons. They run away off into the wilderness. Now remember, who put him on the throne?
Nebuchadnezzar
did. Nebuchadnezzar wants people to be faithful to him, right? You don't mess with Nebuchadnezzar. And this is where he's a ruthless guy. But he goes out and says, we're going to find him. We're going to destroy this king. He finds Zedekiah and his sons. He kills all of his sons, all of the princes, basically, of Jerusalem, of Judah. And then he burns out Zedekiah's eyes. Yep. You remember this? He burns his eyes out, and then he chains him and takes him back to Babylon to forever be that you do not cross. I'll tell you what, everybody else here, they took your king, the one Nebuchadnezzar put on the throne. Okay? He was looking for loyalty. He may have come out different. But why did he do this? Okay? You learn about that part of it. Zedekiah had tried while Nebuchadnezzar was away. Before he got to this point, Zedekiah got word out to Egypt, the second eagle, and said, I want you to come. We've been great pals for a long time. You don't like Nebuchadnezzar either. Come on up to Jerusalem, and we'll put our arms together. This was not God's plan, by the way. And this is the second eagle, where he's saying, Egypt can help us out. You bring a whole bunch of horses, you bring a whole bunch of army, and we're going to defeat him. I need you, Egypt. I'll be loyal to you, Egypt. And God says, that's not my plan. I've been telling you for generations, you are going to be taken over by this. And this is all because I am trying to correct you as a country. I'm trying to discipline you as a country and change who you are. Remember last week, Jacob talked about the stony heart. I want to take that stony heart that you have and turn it into flesh, into real things where you're sorry for what you've done and where you don't walk that pathway anymore. I have the power to change you like no one else. So when God, when Zedekiah reached out of God's plan and said, I'm not going the way you want me to go. I'm going to try to get anybody I can to fight this. Zedekiah reached out to Egypt to try to get some help. It didn't work out well for him. All right? He was put in chains in Judah for the rest of his life and stayed there. Okay? Never was freed. Never was freed from prison. So, know this, that God has a plan, and God is trying to say, look, don't reach out to other people for your help. Come to me for your help. If Zedekiah would have turned to God on his knees, it may have turned differently. But instead, Zedekiah said, I'm going to find an army, and I'm going to defeat this Nebuchadnezzar. When you try to work your problems out without God in them, and you say, I don't want what God has for me. I don't want God's plan. I don't want to walk through this pathway. I don't want to go to Babylon. I don't want to be taken over. I don't want any of this. Know that God still has a plan. So it's much better to bend under Him and to know that God will discipline you. And in Hebrews chapter 12, verse 11, just going to tell you, it says, discipline is unpleasant for the moment, but in the end, it yields the peaceable fruit of righteousness. When God is disciplining you and saying, do this, work to listen, work to change as God can change you, because he can change you, and he's the only one that can change the hard heart that we have inside of us. I often have a rebellious heart inside of me. Oftentimes, I've tried so many times to fix it. I can't do it. Only God can do it. But God has a plan for me to walk. I don't know what it is. I don't know what all of the things entail. But I know that I can't fight against God. I should walk that pathway. Because God can take my heart of stone and change it to a heart of flesh. Okay? Where I am useful to him. So just know, God's plan is in this whole thing. God has this whole design all put together. He's trying to tell it through stories and signs and all this thing through Ezekiel. And Ezekiel's got a lot to tell. All right? Thank you very much. We'll see you next time.